Oh, good. Okay. None of the new ones are there.
Definitely in the office of the inventor. Tim.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, I'm good, Charles. How are you doing?
Good. Great. Where are we? What's going on here?
Oh, we're here in the building 2 on campus with Jerry Dornietz. Is that how I spell your name?
That's pretty close. I tell people however they want to pronounce it, they can. Jerry Dornietz.
Dornietz.
As long as you don't try and make it French, it's fine.
Okay. And you're an architect in the D2 team?
I'm a software architect in the digital documents group. That's right.
Right. And, just tell us a little bit about what that means. What does it mean to be a software architect?
Well, actually, software architect at Microsoft is a title that I think is interpreted differently in different organizations and even for different individuals. So in my particular case, although I'd like to think that I establish technical direction for a lot of the work that goes on, I don't actually manage any of the engineers responsible for executing on technical direction. So I provide a lot of help, a lot of direction, but no one has to deal with me when it comes review time, and I don't have the authority to ding them for not having listened to me. So I kind of like that I know that if I've persuaded someone to do something, it's because they agree with me, not because they report to me.
Right.
So other architects at Microsoft have large organizations they manage. I don't.
So are you kind of responsible for setting up the overall API and the class diagrams and the overall sort of inheritance kind of hierarchy there?
Or? I wouldn't say that I'm responsible for setting the whole thing up. I definitely participate in review process. There are some key areas where I will try and set some direction. Most of my focus has been on the specification known as Metro and its relationship and representation in the Avalon framework.
Right.
So as a result, although I'm in the D2 organization, I participate in a group of people that's responsible for the overall Avalon architecture. So I'm a member of the Avalon Architects team with a lot of folks that probably have a lot of public visibility on blogs and channel 9.
Right, so guys like Chris Anderson and guys that are a blogger as well, as you've said. And
yes.
Around. So tell us a bit about Metro then. What is Metro and where does that sort of fit into Avalon as a whole?
So Metro is a code name for a family of technologies that we announced at WinHack fairly recently. I don't remember the exact dates, although I had fun being there at the Hardware Engineering Conference. And so at a format level, it's a format for the next generation of Windows spool file, Windows printing infrastructure, and also for documents, fixed layout documents that can be interchanged and viewed, on the desktop on your computer. So I should say that although I'm using the word Metro here, and that was a word that was announced, I believe by the time the outside world hears this conversation, we will have announced a new name for this technology. And so what I refer to as the Metro specification will be referred to as the XML paper specification. And so we'll be talking about XPS documents rather than Metro reach documents, which is a term that's kind of confused the world no end. So I'm really looking forward to getting past that. So I'll probably jump back and forth between Metro and XPS sort of by accident as making the transition in my thinking and talking internally.
Right. So you mentioned fixed format layout there, right? And Avalon has this notion of adaptive flow layouts, and so this is kind of tied into that somehow, isn't it? Can you just explain where this kind of comes from?
So there are a lot of connections with the Avalon model. The most important connection to really talk about is that the imaging and rendering model, the graphics model of Metro, is the same model as that of Avalon and its media layer. And so as a result, you get this great fidelity in representing fixed information as it's represented on the screen is captured with full fidelity in a file. And so that single imaging model is a key part of the proposition and a key value that some past technologies, we've had some problem where we had mismatches between technologies for the screen and technologies for printing, and that introduced fidelity problems. And so that's one relationship. Another key relationship has to do with the details of the format, and that will sort of relate back to the programming model for manipulating it. So the format starts with a set of conventions based upon XML and ZIP. So one of the goals here is this format is a the details of the format are well-specced, openly published, and we will give others the ability to do royalty-free implementations of it. And so the idea is that not just us, but other parties can do implementations that have nothing to do with Avalon, that have nothing to do with managed code, and still conform to spec. And they can build software that generates the files in the spec, they can do things that view it, and do other kinds of manipulation. So on the one hand, it's a standalone spec, and I've got, and
right.
This is the printed copy of the book.
If you
can download it off of the Microsoft website. So on the one hand, it's independent. On the other hand, it's closely related to Avalon. So I said it has the same imaging model. The markup that actually describes the individual pages in my document and my document as a whole, okay, that markup is 100% compatible. It's a subset with Avalon markup for similar concepts.
Right, XAML.
So, Avalon XAML. So there is an Avalon class called fixed page. There's a tag as a result called fixed page. We have fixed page.
Right.
So we have a subset of the Avalon markup. So if you take the markup that is embedded in my my XPS file, I almost said Metro. If I take my XPS file and, for example, I change an XML namespace, it's a totally valid Avalon XAML file
right.
that I can load in XAML. And so it also gives you a really smooth transition that you could extract something that's embedded in one of my XPS files and then start edit it and put things in it that don't really relate necessarily to the XPS spec and build great Avalon interactive technology starting from this fixed representation. So there's this great connection
And
good transfer of learning skills. So if you know about one, it's much easier to pick up the other.
Right. So you're kind of saying that Avalon is the graphics, the new presentation and graphics display subsystem in Windows and WinFX and Longhorn, and Metro is kind of like the other half of that relating to documents and print.
It's the fixed representation that integrates with that.
Right.
That's right. I lost a train of thought. I'll see if I can get it back, as I tell my children at home that my train of thought just left the station. So I don't know. I don't know if I will get back there again. But got it now. So the observation I was going to make is because the tags are based on the Avalon tags, because the markup is totally compatible with Avalon markup, we can ship based upon the controls in Avalon a viewer written, using Avalon managed code to view the content.
Right.
And so, that viewer just loads the markup, what is essentially Avalon's XAML markup. As I say, it's restricted in various ways. Instantiates a set of Avalon objects that are just part of the Avalon framework already. And, looking on the screen, you see a good fixed representation. And so it also, is highly leveraged in implementing this managed code viewer.
Right. Wow, so that's like four different things you've mentioned as being part of Metro. Then a print spool format, a fixed file format, a container, and then what was the last thing we just talked about? The presentation viewer for it. So all those things are all part of Metro together, right?
Well, those are all in some ways lumped under the word. I mean, the word is just a code word. So,
right.
Code words have a habit of growing and shrinking to encompass all sorts of things.
Right.
I've been talking mostly about format, right? What's important to say here is that, there are APIs in the Avalon platform for dealing with the format. There are APIs for printing. There are APIs for producing standalone XPS documents, and because the principal file format and the standalone format are the same format, It's essentially the same APIs. So if you know how to write code to print, you know how to write code to generate an XPS document.
Right.
So that's one of the value propositions in terms of the API set.
Uh-huh.
Now, furthermore, I started off by talking about a set of conventions of XML and ZIP for sort of aggregating things together into a larger thing we sometimes refer to as a package, and for capturing relationships between these parts.
Mm-hmm.
There's also APIs as part of the Avalon environment. that allow you to build these packages and manipulate them.
Right.
So if you look in the namespace system.io.packaging, right, in an Avalon CTP build, you'll see classes like package and package part and some that involve relationships that lets you build these packages based on ZIP and XML that are kind of independent of the particular problem domain of fixed format documents.
Right.
And so that technology allows, you know, any developer to build their own file format using the same method for aggregating, you know, different name streams into one whole.
Right.
And so, you know, beyond XPS, right, there is this sort of packaging service that you can use to build other file formats as well.
Right.
And that's, you know, say Metro covers a lot of things. Well, it covers that too.
Right. Now, I know we did an interview just a couple of weeks back with Brian Jones, who was talking about Office and was talking about their new XML document format. So is this Microsoft doing two different things, and Office going off and doing their thing and Metro doing another thing?
So this package set of conventions, the ZIP and the XML stuff, is totally shared between the just announced Office formats and the XPS format.
Right.
So the fixed representation that we're talking about is clearly different than, you know, the Word representation of a flowing document.
Right.
But the way in which parts are aggregated and connected is absolutely shared between them at the format level.
Right.
Absolutely.
So these containers are things you can put these fixed format documents, but also put other proprietary bits or other bits of data in them.
As I said, any developer can choose to build a format based upon this format. And they can do it. They can use our managed APIs to manipulate that layer of the format, or they can, you know, write against the spec, and they can write all their own code and you know, omit their own angle brackets if they prefer. And you know, I'm sure there are many ZIP implementations in the world, and they can also work at the format level.
Right. So if you're an Avalon developer, then you can presumably use the System.io packaging sort of APIs to actually work with an Office document in Office 12, is that how it works?
At the level that we share, absolutely the case. So you could inspect the contents of one of their packages and make some, you know, do some manipulation as well. Now, of course, you've got to read their specs to be careful. If you delete the part that has the Word markup in it, you're not going to be very happy with what you have left.
Sure.
But that's absolutely correct.
Right. So, or you could put in something else. You could put in a bit of your own metadata
And I guess, you know, Brian did a little demonstration, I think, that I watched. It's fun to watch a video that's already run on Channel 9, where he sort of demonstrated the extent to which we're based on ZIP, where he renamed some Office files and then used ZIP to inspect the constituent parts. And because we share this level, the same thing happens here.
Right. So just to kind of walk through all these bits and just make sure I've got this right, what we're saying here is if you've got an Avalon app, you can print from that Avalon app, or you can turn it into one of these fixed format formats.
So I can print or I can save. That's
right. And then you can store that fixed format document within an XPS container, and then I can move that around from machine to machine?
When I say save, yes. So I can save directly into the XPS container.
Right.
So the ability you have is to build an XPS document. I don't want to say container. Uh-huh. It is a document. It is a package that conforms to additional rules. If you look at this book, it's like the first half of the book and the second half of the book.
Right.
So you can build an XPS document, or you can print.
Right.
Right. Same model as you say, and then yes, I can ship that around. Now, in practice, depending on what printer you are targeting when you print, right, the spool file may turn out to be XPS format. And so in fact, in theory, you can do this. I have people down the hall done it. I've never done it. You could pause print spooling, you know, grab a copy of the file, and hey, it's an XPS file. It's an XPS document. And I can inspect that. And so one of the things that we've done at WinHack is that we're evangelizing this format for support in print drivers.
Right.
So have a new generation of printers and print drivers that directly accept the format.
Right.
And that's a process well underway, and it's a big theme of the hardware engineering conference.
Right. So this is pretty radical stuff, right? I mean, if we've got a single kind of open standard document format, we've got a single model for printing to documents or to printers, it's all based around Avalon. We've really kind of got a lot further than just Avalon being just this thing about UI and data presentation and things like that, right? I mean, this is really broadening things out to a much more integrated document story.
I certainly agree, but it's important to say that, you know, a platform without printing would be woefully incomplete.
Right.
And so the key thing is not just that including printing, but integrating with the rest of the platform in a consistent way.
Right.
So I'm totally agreeing with you, but it's, in my mind, I just can't imagine, you know, shipping a framework that, you know, I can get things on the screen, but I can't get them on paper at all.
Right.
And not, you know, more imaginable is I can get them on a screen and I can get them on paper, but the ways I do that have nothing to do with each other.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, in addition to stressing that the spool file format and the saved, you know, desktop document interchange format the same, the more important thing is the way I actually, you know, construct things to be rendered on the screen and the way I construct things to be rendered on the page
right.
are the same,
uh-huh.
rather than two totally different models. And so that's an important part of the story as well.
Right.
It makes the Avalon framework just fit together in a much more, you know, reasonable way.
Right, right. So what? How long have you guys been going? I mean, this team, has this been around sort of since?
So, there's no easy answer to that question. And the reason I say that is the organization currently called the Digital Documents, it's Digital Documents Platform and Solutions Group, is I believe the formal name of my organization, was in turn formed by combining two pre-existing organizations which had already been collaborating on these technologies. And one of those organizations in turn, in some previous time before I was involved, was a combination of two other organizations. So I'm not sure I can answer the question concretely. It's certainly been a few years that
right.
we've been, you know, collaborating on this family of technologies.
Right. And when is this all being released? And when can people actually get their hands on it?
So, you know, it's going through a process of refinement. So the May CTP has lots of this code in it. In fact, maybe we'll get a chance to show. I think on this machine I've got May CTP bits installed. There's a component called the Microsoft Digital Document Writer, which will ship with as part of Longhorn and will ship as part of the WinFX runtime, so that it can be installed down level on XP machines as well.
Right.
And as I sit here right this moment, I'm not sure, and I should know, and I'm not sure, maybe you know better than I do, exactly which releases it has shipped with so far. I
right.
can assure you it will ship
right, right.
in future releases. I'm not sure where we are right this moment,
right.
because I'm buried in the guts of the development organization. I'm more aware of what daily builds are like
yeah.
rather than aware of exactly the configuration of external releases.
Right, right. So there's this print driver bit, and that is, you're right, that doesn't ship with the May CTP release, but I think everything else that
right.
we're going to talk about is part of the
May
CTP.
Now, that said, I should be clear, this specification is a draft. I'm looking at the cover here, and it says final here, which is kind of funny, but it's called version 0.7.
Right.
And so the point that I want to make is that
RTM 0.7.
There's going to be a 0.8, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
We are making small changes that on one dimension are not substantive, but in another dimension are totally substantive.
Uh-huh.
And so although you can, you know, play with these features now, right, there is no guarantee that a XPS document, or today it wouldn't be called XPS, today it's called .container.
Uh-huh.
A container document you produce today in the May CTP release will not necessarily yet be openable in the next CTP or beta.
Right.
Now, once we ship, we clearly have this absolute total commitment to the total long-time archivability and durability of files in this format. But right now, we are still making small changes,
right.
and we are also definitely adding features that are not yet represented in any bits that any of our customers or partners would have seen yet.
Right. So like any CTP, I mean, this is just development platform stuff. This might change, or things
exactly.
we might break, we might cut features without telling people in advance.
And you're getting feedback from people.
Yeah, exactly. This is,
yes.
The whole point is, it's,
yes,
I guess it's a community technical
agreement.
Yeah,
yeah right.
good point, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know if you can just show us a quick demo of some of this stuff, because it's often sort of interesting.
So what's interesting about demoing this stuff is that, I mean, it just works. It can be a little boring, is I guess my point. So let me see if I can remember what the heck my password is. I'm notorious for forgetting. So I have open here, you know, the Word file, which is the source for this book that we're staring at here. And so apparently it is, what, 361 pages long. And okay. So I have installed on this machine both a fairly recent internal build of the Microsoft Digital Document Writer, and I also have the MACTP release of Avalon installed.
Okay.
So let me go to print this, and you see I just tried this before you guys came in, so I've done this before, but you see that one of my choices here on what I could print on is the Microsoft Digital Document Writer. Mm-hmm. So this is let me be clear about what this is.
Okay.
This is a print driver, and so this print driver, you know, is just like any other print driver. It'll install on any XP system or later, and it will produce this file. And so what's great about this is this gives the ability for any pre-existing Win32 application to generate an XPS document. So you don't have to rev your app. Every app you have can produce this thing unmodified. And so what I've got here is an unmodified copy of the currently shipping Microsoft Word. So I guess that's Office 11. I lose track of version numbers. Mm-hmm. So this is the retail product that I have open.
Okay.
And so I'm going to print to the Microsoft Digital Document Writer. So let's just say OK. And it's going to offer to save my file. I happen to have done this recently, but I'm just going to overwrite the last version that I saved.
Okay.
And so let's generate a new container. Yes, I really do want to replace the one I last did. And so Word is going to start printing. It's starting off a little slow, and it's going to speed up in a moment. So at the bottom here, you can see the page count.
Page 23.
There we go. Yes. So it's now begun the process of printing these 361 pages.
So, Jerry, what's actually happening here? Because, I mean, Word's got no knowledge of XPS, right?
Right. So Word thinks it's printing to a printer. And so it's using its regular print path to print, right? So it's making GDI calls. The GDI calls are being mapped down to DDI calls.
Mm-hmm.
The print driver is intercepting those DDI calls and then translating from the GDI-DDI rendering model to the Metro XPS, put the word Metro's on the screen, the XPS / Avalon imaging model, and building up this package. So it's
right.
You know, creating all these named parts, putting relationships between them, and generating this file. So it's done. I haven't been paying close attention to say when it's done. So
mm-hmm.
So we have this. So let's minimize this for a moment and keep it around, I think.
Okay.
And I have on my desktop here the container we just built. And as I say, in the CTP release, it's still called, it's called .container. We didn't really have a name yet, and so container was this generic word. So let's double-click on that. Right now, we're getting a little warning about do I really want to open it, which the final product won't do. And we should have
mm-hmm.
a view of the fixed document coming up.
Mm-hmm. So this is opening up in IE, right?
So I double-clicked, and now what I've got is IE hosting Avalon code. That's
right.
That's right.
So is this like an Avalon Express application that we're looking at here, effectively?
This actually isn't an Express application.
Right.
It is as integrated as an Express application will be into the browsing environment, but we're not actually looking at an Express application.
Okay.
So here you can see the actual text, and I can scroll, however, but you can see it looks pretty good.
So that's just identical to how it
so,
looked on
so
page,
exactly,
right?
Exactly identical to the way it was visible in Word. So let me actually go back to the beginning so that we have both documents side by side. Oops, I'm not used to this particular build. So let me just do a little radical. I haven't tried this recently. Let's see, I don't need my control panel. Let's close that. And let's tile these two side by side, shall we? That would be horizontal. No,
vertically.
I meant vertically. You'd think I could remember.
There
okay.
You
so I just want to show, and I don't know if you can see with the camera here. So
mm-hmm.
One of these is Word's native rendering. One of these is the XPS file rendering.
Right.
Okay.
Now, actually, the XPS one looks, if anything, a bit clearer, doesn't
that's
it? I mean, if I look at that...
That's the point I wanted to make.
Okay.
Yes,
right?
It does.
Because the... We have a file format that's really based upon vectors and fonts, vectors and characters.
Right.
Right? So we've gotten a sort of resolution-independent view. I guess it's really high resolution view captured.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we're exploiting the Avalon graphics model to get that thing rendered, and as a result, you're seeing a more attractive, maybe with more accurate representation in the Avalon view
right.
than you're having in the Word view.
Right.
So I don't know. I should have told Brian Jones that I was going to do this. So it's, got wonderful fidelity.
And here, so if you zoom in,
that was my. You're ahead of me, right? And as I view in, it's still going to look, look nice and sharp,
right?
Totally,
right? And
I remember Brian showed this going into
the same
size.
For that matter, I can zoom down,
right? So once I've got this, what can I do with this? I mean, I could send it to somebody else, right?
Well, obviously, you can send it to somebody else,
right?
There are some features that are not yet visible in the CTP releases that we will be doing. So we will be doing some support for digital signatures
uh-huh.
to be able to actually sign
right.
this and send it around
okay.
and sign things. And so that's one of the things
you can guarantee that nobody else is tampering
with. One of the things that's
it.
Coming. That's right.
Right.
And again, because the file format is open, right? People can build their own tools on top of the file format to extend the functionality of what I can do with this file.
Right.
So I could imagine someone building a workflow system on top of this, for example.
Okay.
But it's not something that we...
Now, what if they didn't have Word on their system, right? What happened if you'd send that to somebody else and they didn't have Word
well,
on their
system? Well, let's be clear, right? This file is not a Word file.
Right.
So this file becomes viewable to anyone who has the viewer.
Uh-huh.
This particular viewer that I'm showing you ships with WinFX runtime, both on Longhorn and in separate WinFX runtime distributions.
Right.
We expect and encourage there being other implementations in other environments and other platforms.
Right.
So
again, because people have got the spec, they can just build their own viewer.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So expect to have an increasing ubiquity.
Right.
If I can use a word like that.
Sounds very marketing.
Yeah,
very
I'm not, so it's scary considering I'm in the development organization, so I've got to establish my geek credentials somehow,
yeah.
and I've been talking to marketing speak, it seems, somehow.
So just one other question. What happens, let's say you've got some particular typeface on your system and you print, and you send it to somebody else.
It's a great question. You'd think you've thought about this before. So one of the things of the Metro spec is that it provides for font embedding. In fact, the specification requires that we always embed fonts. We always embed all the information necessary to render accurately. So there are certain cases when there are restrictions on fonts that prevent their embedding, and we have strategies for dealing with that. But in general, we embed fonts, and we embed the subset of fonts necessary to get the job done.
Right.
So this is particularly important for certain fonts you might use. I mean, there are some fonts that ship with the system that have this huge range of Unicode code points covered.
Right.
And I, as an English language writer, am not going to typically use a lot of those code points. It would be a real mistake for me to embed the entire font. Now, having said that, I'm not sure on what date the automatic font subsetting got into the builds of our product, so I can't say
for
certain.
Because I double-clicked on some file in there, and it was giving me just random characters.
I know we have it working.
Right.
We have it working internally.
Yeah.
I'm actually totally confident that the version of MDDW, the digital document writer that I just used, did font subsetting.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what versions have gotten out there, and I don't know if versions didn't. And,
right.
And to be clear, that's the path for unmanaged, legacy applications, right? There's new APIs as part of Avalon for producing things as well.
Right.
And so in many ways there's two different code paths and they each have to do font subsetting.
Right.
And I don't know the relative timing of what release does, does it for each path. I don't remember
right.
that off the top of my head. So this is kind of cool. I can see it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
We can do the same thing, with things that are not Word, they're more graphics intensive, just to show the graphics value here. And so here I've got a PowerPoint presentation. And this PowerPoint presentation, at least a couple of slides from this presentation, I think, this is an actual presentation that was used at WinHack.
Right.
I don't happen to actually know what it is. I got this from a friend down the hall just not too many minutes before you came over. but as you can see, it's pretty graphics intensive. And let's just sort of not to read the text. Greg, you're famous now. Anyway, but so we've got a nice PowerPoint presentation, and I'm just got some nice documents, some nice graphics in it, and so it's
it's typical, you know, beautiful transparency, you know, gradient effects in it. So I've got this document, and so let's use this and do the same thing we just did. So let's print it to the Microsoft Digital Document Writer, and you probably won't be surprised to learn that once again, I just did this previously, but I'll overwrite the version I last did, which was that one. Yes, I want to overwrite this as well. And so, again, we see it printing the 23 slides in the set.
It's about the same kind of speed as if it's printing to a network printer.
And now let's open that container up. Actually, I don't know offhand. I'm curious how big it is. I don't know. I haven't checked. So here we have, you know, that very presentation, and you can see,
right?
You know,
it's got all the background graphics.
Right? It's snappy, right? And it's going to scale well too. So it looks good small.
Right.
Looks good really big.
Absolutely.
And again, you can see that this is real text.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it's scaling just beautifully.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, when we were talking about this from an Office point of view, we kind of showed that actually what Office was containing was a zip file. We talked about this being a zip file, right? So
that's right.
So presumably these things here we could just rename?
Absolutely true. So let's go ahead and rename this to a zip file. And I happen to have my machine set up so that extensions are visible, which makes it a little easier to do this. Most people,
nice.
I don't know if this is...
Whose idea was that to turn that off by default?
We should track them down and interview them.
That's right. I was going to say, this is a development audience, I think, that we're talking to today, or listening in might be more accurate. So presumably, they probably keep extensions on, but not everybody does.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah, I really do want to make it a zip file.
Wow.
So now it's a zip file, and now you can see inside it, right, all kinds of...
Oh, and there's the true type folds that
parts,
you mentioned.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So, in the long run, I'm not sure that we'll see the extension XAML, but I said before that this markup was based upon Avalon markup. So
right.
You can see that you know, each page's markup is actually expressed in a XAML, Avalon compatible markup.
Right.
Right? And so we have.
Can we see one of those?
A fixed document sequence. We also have something called a print ticket, but we can get to that. So
let's
look at one of the pages. And I'm thinking if I open it right now, I'm not sure if some Avalon component is going to try and open it or not. I'd really like to send it to Notepad. Let's see what happens. So let's turn on some word wrap, shall we?
Yeah.
Still not, turns out it's not very readable. Looks like, let's see, we have a fixed page. Mm-hmm. We have a reference to a Metro specific, and again, there's one of these names that's changing, namespace, not to an Avalon namespace.
Right.
And then we have some vector graphics. We see paths in here. And apparently, most of what we're looking at in this particular case is a JPEG, which someone...
Because that's just the title page, is it, perhaps?
Which surprised me. That's right. And so these things are going to vary. They're all pretty small, it looks like.
Right.
But we will no doubt find text that's really text in here. At least I certainly hope so, because I'll be kind of embarrassed if I'm wrong. And let's see, can we find... So, for example, here we have some
Unicode
MSDN development chats. So we have the plain text, and we also have the indices within the fonts, the actual glyphs that are being used. And so in really trivial cases, the two pieces of information can be redundant, but the format... allows for both pieces of information being there. So this tells me exactly what glyphs to use. This tells me the underlying string that's being represented. And having that underlying string is really important for things like accessibility reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So if you only had the glyph indices, you wouldn't necessarily be able to reconstruct what the text is for screen reading purposes and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So like some fonts have different versions of numeric characters, right? Don't they? Like Palatino has like old style one.
So there are... You know, font technology is a whole beautiful subject, and I have you know, some colleagues I've worked closely with over the years who are responsible for that area and are expert in the area. But in general, there is not a one-to-one mapping between URIs and glyph code points or glyph indices, I should say, in a font. And so as a result, you really need to capture the full information here to get this information.
Cool.
So this is not pretty printed. currently. There's a little more white space than strictly necessary, but it's not pretty printed, but it gets the job done. And then we also see we have pings, we have TrueType fonts, so these are embedded fonts. So we have apparently three fonts that are referenced here. And I'm guessing that if we looked at the whatever fonts these were originally, that we would find much bigger fonts on my disk than we're finding here.
Try double-clicking on one
And then furthermore, notice that these fonts have been, you know, because this is ZIP, besides the subsetting, the fact that technology is based on ZIP technology means the physical storage for the font is much smaller than the actual size of the subsetter font, which is in turn smaller than the full-size font, which was on my machine when I started.
Right.
And so we have a lot of images that have been generated as well. And I'm not expert in exactly what decisions are made from the rendering code in deciding, you know, exactly what vectors versus what images to do. But it works. And it captures the thing. So if we go, let's do the same exercise and do it for the Metro spec, which will be, because it's primarily text, will be in many ways much more straightforward. So let's do the same thing here. And of course, there are a lot more pages here.
It's amazing how fast it's done.
Okay, and so here we've got, you know, markup for the different pages. So let's jump somewhere far, just some arbitrary page in here. I don't know, pick a one. I don't know what's on page 135. And so now we have lots of these glyphs elements, right, with a reference to the font, some height information. We have long sets of indices, and we also have the actual text to the attached license agreement, also available at Microsoft.com, whdc-device-print-metro.msbx. So if anyone wants to know where to pick up the Metro spec, I just by chance happen to open to the page that tells you where the Metro spec is available on the Microsoft website.
Outstanding.
But so here you can see the actual XML markup, and this is, you know, just XML.
Right. And this is, I mean, this is pure Avalon, right? I mean, the only thing you'd do to make this viewable from XAMLPad or some other Avalon app is just to change the namespace?
That's correct. I suspect, actually, that you probably don't have to, but that's right.
Right.
That's right. So an interesting question, you know, ignoring the fact that there are, well, there are references here, so you know there are references to fonts, et cetera.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
so there are some issues. I was tempted, and I haven't tried it before, and I'm not going to wing it for you. I'm sorry. It was to actually cut and paste it. It's an interesting suggestion, is to cut and paste it into XAMLPad, and actually render the thing.
But I mean, some Avalon things you couldn't print direct to the printer, right? I mean, like a 3D sort of area or a button or something. How does that work?
Yeah, well, so first of all, it is true that the Metro spec is a 2D spec. It does not have 3D primitives. It does have 2D primitives like gradients and transparency, but it's not a 3D spec, and furthermore, it should be clear that if the focus is on fixed format and sort of things that are printable, animations don't quite fit into that world as well. Right. So, in producing the XBS document, you know, everything is mapped down to 2D. So, the actual process. Let's say in the Avalon environment, you have an Avalon program and you're doing this. The code under the covers will walk the visual and drawing tree. That is actually, you can either, you know, you can work with what's on the screen, or you can build your own visual tree. For example, a specific page size, etc. We'll walk that, and then generate appropriate markup that will achieve the same results. And so, you know, what started out as a button at the visual level, right, is a set of paths and you know, glyph runs, etc. And so what we do is we walk that representation of the visual representation and then generate new markup, doesn't say button anymore, that when loaded into Avalon will produce the same rendering as originally. And so Avalon,
kind of like the lower level primitives behind it.
So Avalon has a shape called a path. So the path is the name of an element in Avalon. And, you know, a path will call the sort of lower level draw path operation, you know, in the mill. And so the media integration level. Integration? I forgot what mill stands for now. So
by generating this path, we will cause an Avalon object in our viewer to be instantiated, which will then issue the same drawing instruction to get the same results on the screen.
Right.
So you take whatever objects you have, ultimately, to make them visible, to render them anywhere, any surface, you've got visuals and drawings,
mm-hmm.
or visual and drawing information. We walk that, capture it, and then generate Avalon markup for classes that, when they are instantiated, will render the same way.
Right, right. So just to kind of wrap this up a bit, I guess, what if I was a developer today looking at this stuff, perhaps I've been playing with Avalon for a little bit, where can I get started with this? What's your kind of call to action for us?
Well, I hadn't really thought through that. So there are a couple of levels to play with here. So first of all is to just actually play with this combination of MDDW and the viewing experience that is installed with Avalon. Again, time-wise, I'm not sure at what point
right.
MDDW is in everybody's hands.
Right, so people today can have everything apart from the MDDW,
right.
I guess. But.
Now, the other thing is to actually start experimenting with the programming model that we have that allows you to build XPS documents. Now, I have to caution that we're at a state partially because of the rename between Metro and XPS mm-hmm. that the naming of the programming model is about to change.
Right.
Right. And there are a number of changes and improvements that we're making to the programming model to make it a little bit more straightforward to do basic things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not radical changes going on, but there are some changes going on, but we'd love feedback on that. But there is a family of APIs that you can use to build your own XPS documents. And then, of course, you can also experiment with the system diode packaging, right, to put other things
right.
in this zip and XML file
right.
and use them for other purposes. And so that's a whole other avenue for investigation, for building your own file formats based upon that. So there's a whole bunch of different levels at which you can interact with this technology as
right.
an Avalon developer.
Right, right, cool. And just as I've been sat here, I've just been sort of looking around your office a little bit and noticed some really sort of rather old products on the top of your shelf there. I see you've got OS2 standard edition with an IBM logo on it.
Yeah, actually, it's just not an IBM logo. There's little slash, first of a new generation,
wow.
and a little sticker here. So this was...
3.5-inch diskette.
Yes, isn't that wonderful? It's still in the shrink wrap. So
nice.
One of my past lives at Microsoft, I was one of the original members of the joint Microsoft-IBM design team on OS2.
Wow.
And although I actually left the project a little bit before the first public version of OS2 shipped, they were still nice enough to include me in the gift shrink wrapped copy with a special little commemorative slash here,
mm-hmm.
right? That says it was there. But so OS2 is one of the things that I've done, and these are sort of the more recent things. They've been here a long time, but Microsoft Bookshelf, Microsoft's first CD-ROM product. I was the development manager for that product. And Access 1 and 2 were up here. I think I stopped at 1 and 2. So I've done a whole bunch of different things, but only the more recent. So the more recent ones that
right.
I have the boxes. And then actually hiding behind my monitor over here is a little autographed thing from marking the release of the Microsoft Reader, which was the more recent work done. So these are all the people I think who contributed to. I don't remember which release of the Microsoft Reader.
Right.
For reading electronic books and electronic publications on pocket PCs and Windows machines, and so I was involved with that before I got into the documents group. So between these different projects, not so much OS2, but certainly Access, Bookshelf, Microsoft Reader, I've done an awful lot of work with file formats on the one hand, and actually when it comes to the reader XML-based file formats in the other, and actually, when I was working on Bookshelf, I think it says Bookshelf 87 or something on the front. In those days it was SGML that we were using internally. The product really
right.
doesn't show it, but internally. So I learned about SGML back then.
Uh-huh.
So file formats on the one hand, and XML on the other, have run through a lot of my work for a lot of years.
Right.
So, I was responsible for a lot of the Access Forms technologies, including the persistence of the forms in the database. So, again, the file format work goes way back.
Okay, wow. So what was the first product you worked on then?
The first thing I worked on was Microsoft Xenix. I don't know how many people would likely to be familiar
with
that. So that was you know, Microsoft's licensed version of Unix for microcomputers. I was a kernel guy, and did a couple of processors, but most of my work was targeting the Motorola 68000 family of processors. And so, in its time, that was a long time ago. I did the kernel work for the Radio Shack Model 16. I don't know if anyone remembers that ancient computer. Had a multi-user Xenix installation on it, and at its time, it was the most popular Unix machine in the world. There were more installed copies of Unix on Radio Shack Model 16s than any other computer.
Wow.
But anyway, so did that. Did a kernel for. A licensee of the original Stanford University Network computer design. So, you know, Stanford University Network is SUN. So it's the same design that Sun started with, although they migrated away from it. But it was designed at Stanford by a fellow named Andy Bechtolsheim. But anyhow, so I did that as well. But worked on other process stuff. So I started in Xenix. I did a little tour through our sales organization, our OEM sales organization, because I wanted some customer contact. I worked on the IBM account team and worked on OS2.
Right.
And I won't bore you with all the other details, but CD-ROM access, and briefly was in Microsoft called program manager, but in a technical strategy organization that was under the office of the CTO here.
Right.
So I've been a developer, I've been a program manager actually twice, and I was actually in a sales organization for a while, although there I still had engineer in my title, so
right.
I could have a little self-respect.
So
sorry for all my friends.
Pretty much the early days then.
I've been here a long time, that's right.
So what was it like working at Microsoft back then? It must be a very different company to now with 60,000 employees.
It was small. it was a much smaller company. That's certainly the case, and there were, there are advantages and disadvantages in terms of the changes since then. Mm-hmm. Individual developers. How should I say this both positively and negatively? There are certain things that are easier to do as an individual, but there are certain things that are easier to screw up as an individual, and I can think of both of those examples, and I will spare the innocent and not talk about those things. It was an exciting place then, and it's still an exciting place now. What hasn't changed about the place in all the years that I've been here is what got me excited when I first came here was just interacting with all the other smart people. No matter how smart you are, no matter how expert you are in some particular domain, you're always going to find yourself working with someone who knows more about something you care about than you do.
Right.
Right? And the stimulation of brainstorming constructively, and sometimes arguing not so constructively, right, about whatever interesting topic, right, is just very satisfying, stimulating, always learning. Right? The other thing, of course, was that, you know, all the time there, you've always had a feeling that you were going to have impact on a lot of people. It was true when the company was small, because, you know, what I thought of as the microcomputer or PC industry, because the way it was taking off, it was true then, it's true now. And that's very exciting. One of the things that's changed, of course, now that we're a really big company, then we were a small company, and because it's such a big company doing so many things, one of the things that still make the place exciting for me is, if for any reason I were to lose interest in what I was doing now, there's so many other interesting things going on at the company that it's easy to find the next interesting thing to do.
Right.
Back when the company was small, yeah, there were a lot of interesting things, but their number and scope was somewhat smaller.
Right.
But so you know, that's pretty exciting. So, you know, what drew me to the company is still here, and I have, you know, some added benefits.
Right.
But we're building, you know, bigger software, deploying it to more people, and the software is more critical to the lives of our customers than it ever was before.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of things have changed, but a lot haven't. And people like to ask, have there been any radical changes over the course of the many years I've been here? And the company is in many ways very different, radically different, you could say, than the company was when I joined. But I can point to no moment in time as some great, you know, inflection point in the company's history. It was an organic evolution, not, you know, three earth-shaking revolutions along the way.
Right. So what was the most fun product you've worked on, do you think?
Well, I guess the politic answer is what I'm doing right now.
Well, of course. I should have exceptioned that out,
right,
I guess.
That's right. Because my manager watching. So many projects have been a lot of fun. It's such an unfair question. One thing that strikes the mind, I won't necessarily most fun, but in my recent history and working on the Microsoft Reader technology, beyond producing a technology and having been very proud of the work that I did internally in terms of helping to actually build that, I was responsible for both the sort of the layout engine and the file formats and the tools for converting between authoring file formats, but also got involved in a standards process, an open standards process for defining standard promulgated by what was formerly known as the Open eBook Forum. They recently changed their name, called the Publication Structure Standard. And so working at that sort of standards level with folks from other companies, from academia, competitors, and that collaborative process with outsiders, including competitors, was terrifically satisfying. And so I won't necessarily say it's the most fun, but it's one of the things that stands out as having been, you know, different, right, than much of the rest of my work. Clearly, my work with IBM was highly collaborative. Clearly, the work I'm doing now, Microsoft does not sit down, do things internally, and not talk to the outside world. But that standards process and that collaboration with these bright people from all sorts of backgrounds is certainly unique compared to many of the other things that I've done.
Right. Wow. Jerry, it's been awesome talking to you. It's very interesting to find out a bit about Metro.
Thanks for coming by. I hope I haven't been too dull and prattling, and worse, I haven't sounded too marketing-like, as I think you accused me of, and I hope I didn't insult my sales friends by the remark I made earlier. But it's been fun.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.